Hello, I'm Shara Beckley. In today's episode, we're talking about writing emails. And I'm delighted to be joined by Anthony Haynes, Communications Director at FJ Wilson Talent Services. Hi, Anthony.
Greetings, Shara.
So let's dive right into it. Well, first a challenge, because surely everyone knows how to write an email, Anthony.
Yeah, I think everyone who's literate knows how to write an email in the sense of they know how to get an email off. But the question is, do you know how to write an email effectively? And it's worth reflecting there. I mean, I don't know about you, but many, many times I hear people, including myself, incidentally, complaining, you know, they haven't read my email, or they haven't responded to my email, or they haven't acted on my email. And of course, that doesn't necessarily mean you haven't written the email well. I mean, it could be the person you're writing to is ill or chaotic or whatever. But if you find yourself saying that, it might indicate that you didn't write your emails as optimally as you would like. It might be an indication you could improve the effectiveness of it. So let me give you an example. There's a woman I do some work for once a year. She's on an undergraduate course. And she writes these emails, which are extremely long. And they're addressed to four or five people at the same time. And different bits of the email apply to different people. So there's little bits that apply to everyone. And then there's a bit that applies to one person, a bit that applies to another. And so reading it is just a nightmare. And as a result of that, I actually miss bits of information because I just don't take it all in. So I think generally there's a room for improvement, scope for improvement in terms of effectiveness of writing.
Absolutely. And you've hit a trigger point for myself. Having studied politics and international relations, I remember coming out of uni and making that transition to the corporate world and going, oh, wait, you don't need a long sort of email to give you the full details and tell you the context and everything behind. No, it is that shift. So there are probably some to be conscious of, some degrees in the arts that, you know, you have to make a intentional effort to double check your emails and ensuring that you're being as pithy as you can.
Yes, it's interesting that, isn't there, different tribal norms. I mean, I've worked with a few people that have degrees in art subjects such as English literature and then move into engineering, and they often get frustrated because they write things that they take to be well written and their readers don't like
it. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so with that as our sort of foundation, for example, what can we do to help ensure an email is effective?
Well, I've reflected on my own experience of that a bit, but I think much more importantly, with a friend of mine, Inji Musa, we spent quite a lot of time investigating content online to see what other people were recommending about how to write emails effectively. And I've distilled it into really a protocol. Okay. I think there are about half a dozen decisions that you need to make, and it's good to work through them to get to the effective, you know, formal email.
Pens and papers out. What's the first one?
The first one is simply to ask whether email is the optimal form for communication. So, you know, very often people just think, well, I need to communicate with X, I'll send an email. And that's almost like a reflex action. And I just think, well, no, just pause a minute. Like, have you asked yourself whether email is the best form? And when I notice it most is someone sends an email, they don't get a reply, and they send another email, and then they don't get a reply, they send another email. And at some point in that sequence, you have to ask yourself, well, email doesn't seem to be working. You know, could maybe another form of communication? I find that using the telephone, it can be extremely effective. And, you know, when I was young, phoning someone up didn't really make an impact because we all phoned each other all the time. It's really all we had. And these days, everyone has phones, but they don't use them for phoning people. Actually, phoning people has a bit of an impact. You know, it stands out a bit. And incidentally, you can often, you know, one email begets half a dozen more. You know, would you like to meet? Yes. Which day should we meet? What time should we meet? When should, you know, where should we meet? It's half a dozen emails. And often you can just nail all that in one phone call. So I think the first decision is actually make a decision about whether email is the right form for your particular communication.
I couldn't agree more. And I was nodding, but of course our listeners can't see that. The number of times I've probably been waiting on an email, be it over a week or two, and a quick phone call has given me the answer I need in literally less than 5 minutes. And it's also the other benefits from communication that you can get with a conversation in terms of understanding the other person's tone and sort of really communicating a bit more effectively.
Yes. Yes.
Alrighty. And the second decision.
The second decision is deciding how to chunk content. And it's a decision that needs to be made, because what I'm trying to avoid here is writing a long screed. Because I don't think this is just me. When I open an email and there's just a whole wodge of text, I really don't want to read it, you know, and it's very off-putting. So what I try to do is find ways of chunking things into more than one email. So basically, there are two ways of doing it. It may be I send an email dealing with one question or one aspect of a problem I want to solve or whatever. And then once that's dealt with, then I think, okay, now I'll move on to the second aspect of this issue. So it's like a sequence of emails. Or the other thing is I sometimes send several emails more or less simultaneously to the same person, but they're on different topics. Yeah. So I give them different topic lines. And I keep each one short. So, for instance, you know, the managing director of FJ Wilson, the company behind this podcast, Fiona Wilson, I often have to email her. And often they're really about quite different kinds of things. So I will actually just – I won't put everything into one email, because it's harder for her to read it, it's harder for her to respond to everything, and it's harder for her to retrieve the information later. So that's not a great way of communicating.
And as a recipient of one of your emails, or some of your emails, Anthony, I couldn't agree more. It's really helpful being able to differentiate and distinguish between the two. And as some of us will know, you get that long email and you have 5 minutes between meetings. What are you going to do? Mm. I often put it to the side to come back to. But it's very often that I never get the chance to come back to it. So chunking and breaking it out those emails per topic.
I think what you say there is particularly true, because nearly all the time we read the email off a screen. We just know from the psychology of reading that people don't really read long text continuously on the screen. They will tend to kind of just skim and scan.
Definitely. So that was our second. What's third?
Well, the third one is, as I say, the second one was making a decision to chunk things. And then the third one is to choose the best possibility for that. So one possibility is you write an email where the email itself is actually quite short and simple, but you want to give them, you want to elaborate, you want to give them more details. So you put that into an attachment. And this is actually a very traditional sales technique. It goes back well before email. You know, often what you would do in sales is send someone a short letter, one side of paper, easy to take in. And then the second piece of paper is another document that gives them, you know, the detailed specification or whatever it is. So using attachments is a way of preventing this long screed of email. And if you're going to put everything in one email, write very short paragraphs. So it's not the way you were taught to write an essay in school, you know, with developed paragraphs, but make each paragraph probably one sentence each. Yep. I mean, it might just be two. Lots of space between paragraphs. Put in some subheadings, you know, like where, when, why, or something. And so the initial impression when you open the document is not, oh, what's all this stuff? But it's like, oh, yeah, making it helpful for me, you know, bit at a time. I can manage that.
We all know that feeling. And the other thing that I love, and I also love receiving, is bullet points. You know, we can make use of some of our punctuation and probably keep it to three.
Yes.
When sending out information. Okay. So that's a sort of a combined second and third on the making a decision to chunk, and then how to chunk. What's our fourth?
I think ask yourself whether there's a particular kind of response. I mean, ask yourself what you want people to actually do with your email, and then make it explicit. So put in what these days we tend to call a call to action. You know, do you want them to confirm that they've read it and they're happy with it? Do you want them to respond with a particular piece of information like, yeah, that's fine, or what do you actually want them to do? And preferably at the end of the email, just be explicit about, well, what's the action that you're hoping that person will take? And I think I probably write in a pretty traditional English way. And I think maybe English people are not always terribly good at this, or tend to be a bit kind of oblique, a bit indirect about things. And I've had to sort of train myself to say, no, just tell them what it is that you need. You know?
Spell it out. Again, I couldn't agree more. And something that I found particularly useful is updating the subject title of the email. Okay. So whether I needed an approval from a manager, you know, I'd put in the subject for approval, a little bit of detail, and then the date of when I'd need it by, or, you know, for review if it was something that they, you know, going to a comms team that needed to be reviewed. And then obviously if it's just a need to know, you can also probably put that in the first line just to help prioritize accordingly.
I find that very helpful. I do that occasionally. In fact, yesterday there was an email where I needed to forward it to my wife who I work with, and I changed the subject heading because the heading from the original person sort of made sense to me, but it wouldn't make sense to her. It wasn't what she needed to know. But I'd like your point very much, actually. It makes me realise I don't do that routinely. That should be part of my protocol, to ask if I need to change the subject heading.
And it's also
thank you
updating it as the chain goes along, right? Because you have an email chain that could be over several weeks or months, and you're using the first subject from the very first conversation, whereas you've graduated in where you are, whether it's, you know, it's something before a deal, after a deal, for example, or pre-interview, post-interview, but it's all on the same chain.
Yes, no, that's a great point, so thank you. I will put that into my protocol, and I might acknowledge you, or I might pretend it's my own idea.
Thank you. Okay, so that's the fourth. We've got two more left, which is our fifth decision.
Well, it's in a way quite an obvious one. Are you sending it to the right address? And I'm sure we've all had examples, and maybe we've all perpetrated examples where we've sent emails to the wrong email address. That might not be the right or wrong person. It might just be that person uses different email addresses for different purposes. But I think also a point that I said I developed the protocol with my friend Inji Musa, and the point that she made, which I hadn't really thought about, is, are you sending it from a right address if you have more than one email address? I mean, I work for two businesses, and I also use personal email. It's a bit confusing if you send it from not from the right email address, and it might even get stuck in spam as a result. So just checking which email address you're sending it from is part of the protocol.
Yeah, and to add another layer to that, it's even if when you're working one organization, you might have access to two mailboxes, which has been my challenge. And there's a generic mailbox, which, to your point about spam, sending something goes directly into someone's spam versus the personal email address, which would not go into spam, so just being conscious of that as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And then the final decision, the sixth.
The final one, I think it's actually the most important. So I would say if you were going to do one of these six, this would be the one to do, because it has a big impact, but it's actually very easy to do. That's why I like it. Think about the title in the subject line, and just make it as short as you possibly can, but do indicate what it's about. I suppose everyone does that. Try to indicate why you're sending it, or why someone needs to read it. And if you get those things right, if you keep it short and you indicate both the what and the why, it makes it much easier for you and for the other party to archive it, if they use folders, for example, or keywords, and to retrieve it, so they can find, you know, what was that email that Shara sent me again? What did she say? Mm-hmm. It's much easier to pull up the right one.
Definitely. So those are our six, but I think you have a bonus one for us. Finally.
Yes, indeed. I think there's make a decision about how formal you wish to be. And this is a real problem area, because in our society, I don't think there's any consensus about how formal an email should be. So there isn't a single answer to it. I think people have different models in their head. So some people think of an email as a letter, but it happens to be a letter being sent digitally rather than through the post. And some people think of them more as text messages. And of course, if you think of it as a letter, you're going to write it in a different way, in a more developed and formal way than if you think of it as a message. And the problem here is you don't necessarily know what the other person, what their mental model is. So I think the only advice really is to say, if you're in doubt about that, err on the side of over formality, you know, treat it more like a letter than a text message, because it's easier in subsequent emails to kind of nudge the formality level down than it is to nudge the formality level up.
That is such a good point. Especially also, to your point, there isn't this general consensus. So even from, you might have your own style, but going from organization to organization, there's a different culture to email. So then you need to adapt to that. So always better to start with formal than the other way around. And also I found that there could be a percentage of empathy we probably need to have as a recipient, because there's so many different lenses, whether it's a generational lens on the way, you know, slightly mature workforce would send an email versus someone who's just come out of university, for example. So there's those sorts of things, and we've already talked about tones, etc. So it's always better to err on the side of formality and then work your way down, like
you said. Yeah, but I think you make a good point about empathy, actually. I mean, I don't like getting an initial email from someone which is very informal. And there have definitely been occasions where I've actually felt narked and offended by it. And I've had to learn to remind myself that this might not be someone actually being offensive. It might simply be that they're used to a different norm. So it's important not to be sort of hypersensitive to these things.
Yeah, and I've received one-liners before, and I'm like, oh, is this person not very happy? And then you speak to that person, and they're absolutely happy or a different tone. Yes. So it's always just being mindful of that where you can. Well, then, I think we've got a lot here, actually. I did start off with a challenge, and I think we've certainly noted a number of decisions one needs to take before sending an email in order to make it effective. So thank you as always, Anthony.
Good. Well, thank you, Sharon. Thank you particularly for your suggestions to add to the protocol. So, thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. And please do join us for the next episode of Recruitment in the Modern World. The music for this episode comes courtesy of the composer, Harry Chalmers.